Imbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Kaplan, Chief Technology Officer at Imbalance IT Solutions, bringing you Episode 11 of the Balancing Act podcast titled Aptitude for AI Security. We're doing a bit of a change today where I get to play host and I get to welcome Ryan O'Halloran, VP of Security Strategy here at Imbalance, who specializes in both cybersecurity advisory and architecture for our enterprise clients, as the guest today. Today, we're going to discuss everyone's favorite IT buzzword these days, AI. And we get to discuss and deliver an overview of the threats, protections, and future of AI security in the current state of IT landscape. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Great to see you, Michael. It's fun to be on the flip side.
Absolutely. You know, appreciate the time today. So I think, you know, to kick us off here, I've noticed that, you know, although society is now intensely aware that AI is both an enabler of so many new innovations and productivity enhancements, but it also can be a threat. The way that AI security is discussed, talks rarely get more specific into what those threats can be in detail without spending hours digging through white papers, podcasts, or asking your favorite LLM what those might be. You know, given your history, given your expertise, could you help describe what AI threats exist for security teams to be both aware of and how they can potentially mitigate those threats today?
Yeah, 100%. And I couldn't agree more. As many things as we're getting hit with, not a lot of them have a level of depth. So I'll go through a few different things. I think one of the most common ones and probably the more known ones is around prompt injection, right? Okay. So what is that? That's a type of attack that targets a large language model, right? Which when we talk AI, which can be many things, I think specifically we're talking large language model. And that's where
For those that may not be familiar with that what most people would consider the ChatGPTs, the Geminis of the world, the Perplexities, those types of, you know, prompt injection security issues. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Or even like rolling your own internally, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually doing, you're having that, you know, true interaction, right? And what can happen is an attacker can craft a malicious input of some kind, right? It's disguised as something legitimate, but it'll manipulate the AI's behavior. And that can lead to AI linking sensitive data, spreading misinformation is a big one, sometimes called bias, right? Which is substantial in a lot of companies' corporate policy now, or just performing an unintended action. And when it comes to prompt injection, there's a few things that are very important. One, I think, is monitoring and logging. You need to be able to monitor and log for these sorts of things. And you're starting to see the release of what I'll compare to antivirus for AI, where the prompts are being sanitized, maybe across multiple models, maybe across one, to get ahead of that preemptively before it gets executed. So I think that's one big thing. Another one is your prompt design. So when you're a developer and you're designing the prompt, you need to be very careful about separating the system itself and what you're asking the system to do from the user prompts, right? Because you have the system instructions telling the system what to do. Those should be kept as far away from that language model as possible and securely, right, shielded, so to speak, so that users' natural language are less likely to result in such a thing, either intentionally or unintentionionally, right? And I think the last one, and this is going to be consistent probably throughout, is role-based access control. Do not give more control to the language model than is absolutely necessary. And understand how your data gets governed that's training it itself. I think those are probably the biggest things around prompt injection. The second one I think that's important is poisoning. So the language model itself, right, can be poisoned with bad data, which impacts, it's an attack on integrity, right?
Okay.
So,
is that like putting in bad data to train the LLM model ahead of time so that when the person goes and asks the query, they get wrong data back because you've poisoned the data that the large language model is trained on?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So training the language model with bad data, which impacts the integrity of the responses you get. And I'll talk about that a little bit later, because when what's at risk in the security community, I'm starting to see integrity be more at risk than even confidentiality. And I think we have a future of that to consider. How you can combat that, right, is you need to select solid sources of information. Like anything else, you need to source your information from resources that you trust to the best of your ability. You can't believe what you hear these days, right? Everyone says, oh, if it's the internet, it must be true because it said it's true type thing. You need to be just as careful, especially with your language model, right? I think adjacent to that, and maybe one that's a little less understood, is a concept of what they call RAG, or retrieval augmented generation. Since large language models are at risk of hallucinations, they're often deployed alongside RAG. And the idea there, to give you an example, is it reaches outside of the language model itself to pull something into it. So let's say, hey, I need you to do this, and I want you to pull this in this spreadsheet. The language model may help you achieve that task for you, but it has to go outside and grab another source of information, right? But in doing so, that's going to open up that LLM to data poisoning vulnerabilities that extend far beyond the model itself, far beyond the initial training, right? Using the same methods as you would use to poison the language model early on, right? Sometimes they call that front running. The attacker can manipulate the knowledge receiver component of the RAG, right? And as a result, you just can generate completely false or outright malicious text, you know?
So it sounds like, you know, from the initial kind of use cases that you had, the first one being, I'm going to leverage the LLM to do something I shouldn't be allowed to do by, you know, figuring out where the tool might break in terms of being able to either access data that I shouldn't have or potentially get around certain safeguards that you may theoretically have in place. And the other one is, I'm going to poison the data that I have in some portion of the chain, either making sure that, you know, a threat actor could get in and train a whole bunch of bad data, especially if they knew what your data sources were, or, you know, in that process of doing RAG, that's where they can, again, just if they know the type of data or the files that you're potentially needing to, you know, augment your query, if I poison that, I'm going to do that. So it sounds like there's, you know, yeah, multiple different ways. And, you know, I'm thinking, and, you know, not to take us on too much of a tangent here, I'm thinking,
oh, please,
a lot of these, you know, LLMs, and a lot of what we're seeing today is kind of those initial productivity enhancements. You know, you have your Microsoft Copilots of the world and some of these other solutions that are trying to do that. Not only is it extraordinarily powerful in the value that it can bring, but it's also now adding an additional level of work that security teams, data teams, and just basic training that your users have to go through to make sure that the data that you're delivering doesn't have hallucinations, doesn't give you incorrect information, or doesn't give you information that you shouldn't have access to. It's a brand new world that we're living in. It feels, you know, very exciting, but also, you know, it, at least in the conversations that I've had, I'm sure that you've had as well, people are taking that step back and really being thoughtful and iterative around how they're going about approaching this problem, and maybe starting small, feeling like they can get their arms around those types of challenges and kind of iterating from there, especially if you have 5, 10, 15, 50 years worth of potential data that you're sifting through, you may not have always been the best at limiting access to who needs what, file shares that just feel like document graveyards that may not have accurate information. And you have to go through this process of almost data hygiene. You know, maybe as we dive into that, maybe you can talk to me a little bit more about what you're doing and the types of conversations that you're having with clients on kind of improving that overall security and data hygiene. But then how are you, on the flip side, for the users, how are you bringing that kind of security awareness training and, you know, company policies around that overall adoption and education?
Yeah, so there's a couple things there. I'll start with the segue you had on data leakage, right?
Yep.
In general. That problem is an interesting problem for sure. So I think what's happening is we've used so many collaboration tools and we've gotten comfortable with that. The problem now, though, is you're bringing with APIs in any other tools to hook into your stuff. So in a Microsoft context, for instance, there's all these third-party things. You're hopping on calls that are where a note taker is and someone's telling you, shut that off. You know, and I'm seeing that stuff happen. Hey, you know, there was no privacy warning around that, or in the shadow, right? The typical shadow IT type conversation of things happening, users going outside because they want to be enabled to do things better, but they don't understand the risks of those trials. Yep. And a lot of times those trials, when you're in trial mode, if you're using that with your sensitive data or proprietary information, that data might not be yours already. You know, it's similar to the marketing folks that are trying to use that and things like that, right? You might go through a trial and you're just giving it up. So it's very important to understand the privacy policy of your trials to lock down, not entirely, right? Maybe not prevent your employees from using these AI tools because they should, but make sure it's with an administrator's approval. And that's one of the big things I think that goes in to policies is you can then give the administrator the opportunity to do a background check on that application and see, is it safe? Do they have a SOC 2 or an ISO? You know, do they, while you're in trial mode, steal all your stuff? Or is it in a private bucket, right? Do you have the right to erase? All those other kind of privacy elements. But it's more important now than ever that that's screened first before you attach that thing into your system. I think that's a big one. Another one is obviously around leaking the information. So because there's so many different AI possibilities, it's really easy without any controls in place, other than, you know, in a company policy on a piece of paper, you might say, hey, don't do that, right? But to actually prevent a user from doing that or deter them from doing that requires a very deep level of real-time security. And the only ways I've seen to kind of accomplish that, first, on the data side, that's where it all starts, data governance. That problem has existed trying to get to the point of DLP forever. And now the velocity and the contact frequency to get to that data without knowing what you're doing, just by asking it, hey, give me everybody's socials that you can find. That is so profoundly more risky just because the contact frequency of users coming to interact with it, you know?
Well, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I now have one location that I can go to potentially surface all of this information versus if I'm a threat actor and rolling it back a few years before these tools were there, I would have to figure out and be in your environment for an extended period of time, having to go kind of almost hunt and peck for all of these different data sources.
Yeah.
But if it's all connected, I now just, as long as I have valid credentials and have access to the tool, I can now just start, you know, basically getting free rein to, you know, potentially very sensitive data, especially to your point, if you don't have that good data governance, data security, appropriately permission type of data in your environment. And it, it's a hard problem to solve. You know, it would be great if it was easy, or if everybody had taken the steps to making sure that your data was locked down from day one. But, you know, there's a million other things going on in people's day-to-day lives. They don't necessarily have the time to, you know, build all of that automation to go back. So, you know, I'd be curious to know, and I know we're probably pivoting a little bit, is like, how are you helping clients address that problem? You know, I'll see the Microsoft Purviews of the world and some of these other security context tools that can help you with surfacing some of that important, you know, where is your sensitive data? So you maybe know, okay, that's the first, you know, if I'm going to use this as a data source for my, you know, internal LLM or something along those lines, how are you helping to kind of identify those sources, and how are you helping to solve for maybe that initial problem? Just be curious to see what you've, you know, where you've gone in conversations with our clients around that particular problem. Because it almost feels like that's where organizations almost get paralyzed with the, oh, this feels like too hard of a problem to solve, so either just going to let it happen and then fix it if it surfaces, or we just don't want to, we're just going to have a blanket, you can't use any of these tools because it feels like too hard of a problem to solve.
I love that question. So I think the first thing we need to do is recognize that we cannot do this manually. We have to tap out. It's not a matter of, hey, you know, you can do it manually like this, or you can use a tool. You need to use a tool. You absolutely need to, because the second data is created so quickly now, and that data becomes available immediately. The second you try to, first of all, there's been organizations and customers that we have, and historically all over the place, that have attempted to solve this problem, even dedicated resources to this problem, and failed, you know? So I think it's in the tooling, it's not the DLP tools like Purview that's going to enforce or do something once it's classified. It's how accurate you are in classifying the data in the first place. And what I've seen is, in order to enrich that, you have to really focus on what type of data you have and how much you're willing to invest in that to not be a problem. Because it's not a cheap problem to solve, but I'll tell you what, you'd rather have the right amount of data with the highest efficacy be understood so that you know how many sides there are to the dice you're rolling. Because you don't otherwise. You just don't. And, you know, that's still a problem in general when you get breached, to understand, okay, well, what data got breached? Right? Because you might not necessarily know what data is where, because you're not in complete control of it. If you say you are, you're not. I'm sorry. You don't know what your users are doing. You could say you're not PCI. They're putting credit cards in there. You could say they don't store this. There's a password.txt. You know, it's all in there, right? So acknowledging the nature of the problem and the level of automation it's going to take is very important, because then the tools that have failed to serve you in the DLP space are going to do their job effectively. They're going to tag the data right. And then you can go back to your co-pilot and say, don't touch the ones with the sensitive tags, right? Otherwise, the flip side of this that you could do is you're creating language models that are isolated, where they're totally private, right? They're totally controlled. But the problem with that is we want to use our data to become a better business and get it all into one place to understand how valuable that data is. We don't want to sprawl and have a model here, a model here, a model here, a model for this. I was a little scared about this, so I'm going to have a little model here, you know, and that's the alternative.
Sure.
And I think that that's really tricky. So that's the one of the biggest ones, right, is just the data governance, right? And there's various tools out there that can help you accomplish this. And it's just a matter
Does that fall into like the data security posture management type of solution? Okay. Just wanted for our listeners here to maybe understand, like, if they're doing some research on their own, that's the kind of generalized term and generally accepted term for, you know, being able to surface and discover some of that sensitive data so that you can make the informed decision on the type of action that you want. Because
absolutely.
I think you were talking about it. The reason why you want all of these connected data sources is not just to create your own internal ChatGPT. While that can certainly be beneficial and that can deliver some level of enhancement, it's how do you get that next level and move into, and again, I'm sorry for using so many buzzwords here, agentic AI, in terms of being able to build applications on top of that data that can connect all of these sources and do automated actions that you're comfortable letting, you know, the solutions be able to do. Think of it like, you know, the previous generation RP, you know, robotic process automation type solutions, that next level. Let me connect all these sources, but have it use that type of intelligence to also make informed actions based off of a series of inputs to, again, just, you know, automate more of, you know, maybe lower value tasks out of the environment, or hey, a new file gets uploaded for my claims department. If I'm an insurance agent, it can just go through and just start automatically scanning and ingesting all of this data and then connecting all of the different data sources so that this can become the single source of truth and it's just automatically populating and updating versus, you know, a bunch of spreadsheets moving back and forth, a bunch of manual data entry that may not feel quite as valuable. So I think, you know, it's interesting getting to that kind of earlier stage of, you know, overall data security. How do you see our clients in terms of that overall level of readiness? Because I see that, you know, some of these solutions are kind of baked into, maybe it exists in their data protection solution, or maybe it exists, you know, as a separate program or project. How do you help organizations that maybe have some of this visibility surfaced in some of the solutions that you have? How do you help them make those, you know, iterative performance gains or iterative decisions around, okay, if I really care about this data in feeding into my, you know, LLM or whatever it is, how do you help them make that progress so that they don't feel still so nervous that it just, again, the project dies on the vine?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's got some depth to it itself. So going back to, Let me see if I can kind of create a narrative around this.
Please.
So you kept using the word connected. And the reason you kept talking about connecting these things is because that's how you get the most value. Mm-hmm. However, the fear is causing isolation, right? So one of the things that I think about is a lot of customers do have things like Purview and some native tools. Right? Native tools.
Mm-hmm.
For that particular purpose of what they are made to do.
Yep.
Connected is different sources of data. Now we're talking about there's unstructured data up here and structured data down here and all of these other things. And I think that independence of the different types of data and things like that, while using enforcement tools maybe that are native, might be the better route to go, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's one kind of thing to think about. And then I'm sorry, the second half of your question,
in terms of how, you know, clients are approaching those types of problems.
Yeah. So this is, man, and this is just people. So because there isn't exactly a budget necessarily for data access governance or DSPM, right? Because nobody wants to come up and say, listen, I really don't know where our sensitive data is. Nobody wants to get the call during a breach that says, how bad is it? And say, I'm not sure. Versus, I know exactly where that is. And I know exactly how many records that are. Or that isn't a repository that I'm concerned with because I can pull that up and show you right now. I think that level of confidence, however you get there, is important. But you have to position it to the business very differently. And I think because AI is so hot, instead of positioning it as a DLP initiative, position it as an AI readiness initiative, right? Okay. And that, sure. I think, is really helping, because that's what we're hearing. How can we use this? What do we need to do? Forget about the fact that it's been a problem for 20 years and you're basically solving that same problem for 20 years now. The reason you're solving the problem, way heavy on that. And the reason is AI. It 100% is. So I just think creating the narrative about how you're, why you're doing this now and why you need to create the budget and why now you have to draw more of a line between IT being, the IT is not owning the data. They're the custodian of the data, right? Yet the folks that work with the information view the IT as the owner of the data, right? So I think that that line, that understanding, that self-service, right, those types of things, that's where DSPM and data access governance comes in, because a big piece of that is also attributing who's creating this, who's actually accessing this, is it accessible by the right people, right? And I think you need to empower the people, not IT. It's the business owners, it's the head of marketing, it's the head of HR, it's the, you know, the C-suite, it's those people, to be able to empower them to keep control over their data, access control, because they're the ones granting it out. They're the ones, you know, keeping it in. And I think that that's where the cultural change is. And to me, that has been a very common theme. They're like, how do I go back to the well and ask for this? Well, turn it into a readiness and not a a problem, you know, that was always needed to be solved as now. And I think that little distinction really changes the light in which you're viewed as kind of a, more of an innovator than coming for budget. You know what I mean?
I think it's being able to, you know, taking what you said, it's really helping security practitioners and security leadership who are maybe within an organization traditionally known as groups that create friction or slow things down, slow down innovation because of wanting to ensure that overall security. You know, at the end of the day, the businesses want these LLM solutions. They want this AI in their environment. They want to build agentic solutions on top of that because of the value that they feel like it will bring to their business, either being able to create that automation. And these security teams have to be able to speak in the language of what the business cares about. We want to help enable this. We want to do this at the start so that we aren't the next group that's on the news because we've had a whole bunch of unfortunate data leak into the public domain, or we didn't encourage our users to leverage these solutions, and all of a sudden they helped leak data into publicly available LLMs, and now our intellectual property is now in the hands of, you know, either the tech companies that own the and run these LLMs themselves, or are now generally accessible to anybody that might be querying the next version of these tools. I think it's being able to explain and help characterize the potential risks, while also saying this is a problem that can be solved. We just have to be able to provide that level of readiness at the forefront as we're also going through determining the types of data that we care about at the beginning. And if we know all of that, then we can make the most informed decisions on how do we build this kind of general LLM solution, not to get, you know, confused with, you know, small language models that are maybe more vertical specific, like, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, specifically training on like law firm data or specific healthcare data where you care about, you know, accuracy more than general LLMs that your mileage will sometimes vary in terms of the level of accuracy unless you're tuning your parameters to make sure that it's as accurate as possible. I think that's a really profound way in how you described it in terms of how to help those security teams not seem like an inhibitor, but explaining here's the value, here's the reason why we need to do this, is we don't want to be the next group on the news.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I liked the way you voiced a piece there, because in my head I'm thinking, okay, you're not going to the business asking for money because something's hard. You're going to the business asking them for money because it's slowing you down. That's a different narrative. Mm-hmm. And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true, right? It's not under a guise, but it's very important how you articulate that to the business because they care about being slowed down, right? Same thing with software development going on right now. We'd love to secure it right as the house is being built and not out after it's built and then add the alarm system. But is that going to slow us down? And that's always the trade-off, right? So I think businesses need to realize that getting deep control, automation, remediation of your data, if you don't do that, you are going to be left behind. It is slowing you down. It is slowing the business down because for the past year, people are hiring change agents to try to figure out how can I best use AI for my personas and what AI initiative can I actually latch onto to get started. Well, now we're in execution time. You're slowed down. That's just the way that I view it. And I just think that's a totally different conversation to have with a board or, or the big boss, right? It's just a different thing. The other half, I think what you had asked earlier was around, data leakage in general, because you mm-hmm. can do it, right? And that requires data leak prevention in motion. And what I mean by that is before the data is even written, there is an opportunity to stop that data from being written. And there's only, I think, two different ways to go about that I've seen from a tooling perspective. One is with what I'd call, your secure service edge tools or your SASE okay. tools. And basically there's a man in the middle, only for a good reason. It's going to interpret everything that you're doing and send it to the cloud first and then either tell you, oh, you can't do that or you shouldn't do that and here's why, more of a coaching, right? That type of thing. And that's kind of a proxy, right? A cloud proxy. Sure. It's going to take whatever you're doing, drive it there, and then it's going to say, oh, well, you're typing a social security number. Slap on the wrist. You can't do that before you can even enter it into that language model of any kind, right? There's also things like enterprise browsers, which are providing a ton of value to folks. And the reason why this is so good is because in the enterprise browser, you're not actually having to break and inspect anything and redirect it to the cloud. You're in full control over everything they're seeing. So you already have the capability and you don't got to worry about, it's going to slow down this chunk of data, which is usually the most important thing you want to interrogate. So I'm going to excuse that, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, it's already decrypting everything. So you can get 100%. And I think that's really interesting because then you can do things in advance, like mask the data for certain people or draw boundaries between even SaaS applications, controlling how users input data or can read data for things you don't own, mm-hmm. using things to insert, one of the things, there's a robotic, automation, right? To insert, okay, well, as soon as I see something like that happening in the, in the browser, put a pop-up, right? Insert an MFA challenge, right? Even if you're not integrated, just based on the site. And that, I think, is another really interesting way to go about it.
Sure. So we talked earlier about, hey, you have to educate your users on how to do things properly, how to do that. But at the end of the day, whether it's by feeling that they have an urgent deadline to meet, we still almost have to implement the necessary guardrails in place to say, we want to enable you. Please do that. And hopefully we've educated you as well as we can. But if things get lost, things get forgotten, your day-to-day and all of the stresses of the world are bugging you, we'll at least have some level of control in place to prevent, hey, maybe a simple lapse of judgment or whatever it is, but hey, it can also be kind of that reinforcement learning, like, we want you to do this, but hey, this type of data you're not allowed to use, or here's how you should reframe your query so that you're not potentially leaking sensitive data. I think that's, you know, it as much as we would all love, you know, a single tool or a series of tools to always solve the problem, at the end of the day, we're human. We have to be able to understand that the education of the end user is also extraordinarily critical to this overall story. And, you know, we easily forget things because of our day jobs and all of the other requirements that we have in our daily lives. It's important to say, I'm going to continuously educate and improve you on the appropriate uses of AI. But in the event that you forget, at least we have some level of protection in place to prevent an accidental or even an intentional use of incorrect, you know, queries or trying to, you know, leak data accidentally or purposefully.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is unintentional. You know, like one of the other things is, okay, maybe you want to allow AI, but you only want to allow the AI of your choice.
Sure.
You know, there's methods of redirecting back to the AI model that you want to use. Any way you can envision an employee circumventing your systems, you need to tie that to their identity and force them to the right path, right?
Sure.
And I think that if you can do that, you are much more likely to contain things and start to actually help users get educated in a way that is helpful and doesn't feel as much like friction as it does like coaching. You know, hey, you can proceed, but check this out, or not here, but use this AI, right? It's a lot more friendly than block, 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 block. Don't worry. Try it.
Yeah. All of the blocking just leads to all of what, you know, was commonly referred to as shadow IT in, you know, the early stages of cloud computing. People would just get frustrated by the friction that you were introducing and sometimes just want to try and swipe a credit card. Similar situation that can happen in the IT world. So, you know, for my last question, as we wrap up here, I want you to pull out your crystal ball for me and think about, how do you think attacks might evolve with AI over time? And how do you think that will continue to impact businesses?
I'll tell you what, this is a scary one. And I have heard some talks recently from people who are devoting their life to what the future is going to cause.
Sure.
And I think it's, and I mentioned it, I think a little bit earlier, it's going to be around integrity. In security, there's this thing called the CIA triad: confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Sure. Right. And the opposite of integrity is alteration. Now, with alterations, you've seen impersonations, right? So we already have the vishing and all this other stuff, right, where you can't even trust what you hear. When you can't trust what you see, right, we're in a scary place. And what is the verification process around that? And I'll give you a really funny example.
So just to interrupt you for just a second. So for our listeners that may not be familiar with that, it's the idea that, you know, if you get a random call from a telephone line, that they can all of a sudden deep fake your voice within a matter of, you know, a few seconds of capturing that same situation, but with video as well. So that, you know, if it's a sophisticated enough render, it will look like the person that you're talking to. And we've seen situations now where threat actors have become so sophisticated in being able to impersonate that identity so that the other person on the other end of the screen really assumes that they're actually talking to the person that they think that they're talking to, but it's actually a threat actor using AI tooling to impersonate your face and impersonate your voice. And it's an extraordinarily, you know, concerning time when it's becoming so good from how it works that you really struggle to differentiate what's real and what's fake.
Yeah. And when you elevate this concern to the interests of nation state actors, it really gets scary, right? And one of the things, what I was going to get into, I was scrolling and I saw this thing and they're like, what are your grandparents going to do when they can't believe the news? And they had a video of a reporter looked perfect. And then all of a sudden there's a monster coming out behind them in the lake. There's a UFO flying over, right, and stuff like that. And that's an example of integrity that can cause a national security issue.
Sure.
And that to me is what's most concerning, I think, is when you're altering things that you used to accept as fact because of your own personal experience, how bad could that really get, you know? And I think that that's one of the main things we got to think about. I think that's one of the biggest, like even right now, right, with impersonations and deep fakes and things like that, people are falling for it, right, all day long. Sure. And what do you got to combat that? A validation process? You can give them a phone call, you know, and that's hard. That is super hard. I don't know the answer, but I think that that's what the smartest people out there, these data scientists, are working on, is how can I make sure that you know this is real? And that's a big one. Now let's get positive. On the positive side, I think using AI to hyper-personalize security awareness training, and I'll give you some examples, is going to be of a huge benefit. So what about instead of I send you a video and everybody watches the same video and then we do a quarterly phishing campaign, what about a continuous phishing campaign that's personalized to an attack you would have received had it not been blocked by your email gateway, that was meant for you, that you would have actually experienced for real under your circumstances, and I test you on that? Or what about I get a hyper-personalized video then when I fail that speaks specifically to my organization, my language, my context? You know, I just think that that is going to be so much more effective because you're seeing IT people fill in those blanks right now with in-person meetings. And there's only so much in-person security awareness training that you can do that really gets into here's what you might see here, right? And it's not so general. And I think that things like that combined with AI battling AI, right? So like, I'll give you another example for the defenders in the world. AI being built in to the protections that are out there, that can allow you to do some amazing things. You could be an entry level, you know, security analyst now, and you could say, hey, give me every foreign IP that touched my network. You know, to do something like that as a SOC, you know, an advanced SOC person in your Splunk or your whatever you have, and then wait for that thing with all this advanced query versus being able to do that. And then maybe perhaps being able to pull up information that'll correlate all your security tools just from that SIM because it's AI driven. Hey, my identity logins, how many failed and how does that view correlate with this period of time,
sure,
right? Or something like that. I think that that is where the magic's going to be at in terms of how we can still be the pilot, but have the co-pilot.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I think those are the two, that's my fear and my hope.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, there's a new HBO movie out there called Fountainhead, and they touch on some of those similar things around having an AI that's so sophisticated that people who are scrolling on social media just don't know what's real and what's not, and some of the, you know, the unfortunate consequences that it can have there. And where we're starting to see even, you know, high level executives, you know, add additional layers of identity protection in their organizations, because if they're, you know, a CEO of a publicly traded company and somebody can deepfake their video and their voice, you know, on a cent, you know, a nice way, you might, you know, bump the stock price one way or the other. And we saw a little bit of that with some of the impersonation that happened on X, you know, while ago, where somebody, you know, pretended to be, I think it was Eli Lilly, and all of a sudden that stock price dipped because of something that somebody, you know, looked real enough that was confusing. And now if you can do that, but you know, it's always going to require a level of due diligence, a level of persistence, and we're going to basically need to eventually fight fire with fire, for lack of a better term, around delivering that level of artificial intelligence that can fight the threat actors using those same tools for their own various gains. So, you know, appreciate it, Ryan. You know, as we wrap up here, just wanted to say thank you for your time. You know, really appreciate your insight. So thank you. You know,
100%. So happy to be here, and hopefully someone learned something, had a little fun along the way.
Great. So at InBalance, we can guide you with both education, selection, and execution of AI security strategies and solutions. So reach out to us today to learn more. We appreciate you listening and invite you to come check out our next episode. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, all.
InBalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, InBalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at InBalanceIT.com. See you on the next one.